When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, and welcome back to the Unseen Podcast, a podcast dedicated to missing people, unresolved cases, and UK true crime. Today and next week, we're going to be exploring the infamous and tragic disappearance of Susie Lamplugh in 1986. Susie's disappearance has become one of the most well-known cases in the UK, as she vanished without a trace during a routine viewing of a house that she was conducting in her job as an estate agent. Her disappearance shocked and appalled the whole country, and many people empathised with the Lamplugh family, as it felt like it could have happened to anyone that they knew. To this day, Susie has still not been found. However, there have been many developments and theories presented over the years. This episode contains descriptions that some listeners may find distressing, so listener discretion is advised. The 1980s was a decade of change throughout the UK and worldwide, with many people embracing new job roles, new cultural experiences, and enjoying the fun and freedom that many capital cities afforded them. There was a rise in entrepreneurship, and lots of younger people went to universities for the first time. The UK was in the midst of a new and controversial government headed by Margaret Thatcher, which led to a large swathe of strikes and anger towards her policies. During a time where the country had a female prime minister, however, women were gaining more prominence in high-level jobs and careers and were making their mark in business. More women were gaining degrees and demanding better jobs and higher pay. Following the early 1980s recession, which saw many people in manufacturing lose their jobs, the economy began to bounce back in the mid to late 80s, and wages and house prices began to grow rapidly. During this time, people took advantage of this good economy and unemployment fell. This would only last until the early 90s. However, during the late 80s, people were enjoying the boom, and this could be evidently seen in London. One of the people who enjoyed this time in London was Susie Lamplugh. During this decade, Susie was in her 20s, and she had found herself a job as an estate agent at a company named Sturgis & Sons in southwest London. Susie epitomised the 1980s. She was a sociable go-getter who loved her life in London and was thrilled with her job as an estate agent. Being an estate agent was a new, fashionable job during this time, as it provided a good wage, and you could move up quickly on the career ladder. The housing boom meant that Susie was constantly busy, meeting clients and going out on viewings in the London area. She had been born in Cheltenham, but had grown up in London with her mum Diana, her dad Paul, and her three siblings. Growing up, she was an athletic person who enjoyed water and was a strong swimmer. Her family have described her as a happy and fun person who was always busy doing something. She was outgoing, and her father Paul described her as someone who knew how to live life fully. Early on in her career, Susie went to work as a beautician on the QE2 cruise liner. However, when she got the job working as an estate agent, it was clear that this was where she was most at home. Susie moved into a flat on 49 Disraeli Road, just over a mile from the Sturgis & Sons office, on 654 Fulham Road, and she lived there with her flatmate Nick Bryant. Susie loved going to work each day and enjoyed being in the office, her desk in the window facing out onto the busy London streets. In July 1986, Susie was working at Sturgis & Sons and going about her business as usual. On Monday the 28th of July, she travelled to work as she usually did. Her flatmate Nick would later say that he left at around 8 a.m. and that there was nothing out of the ordinary that morning that stood out to him. At around 12:30 that afternoon, Susie left the office to attend a viewing booked in for 12:45. She had asked for the keys to a house on 37 Sherald Road, just a 3-minute drive from the office. She left in the company car, a white Ford Fiesta, and travelled to the house to conduct the viewing. This was in no way unusual and was part and parcel of her day-to-day duties as an estate agent. A few hours later, however, her colleagues realised that she had not yet returned to the office after carrying out the appointment, and this seemed strange to them. The viewing shouldn't have taken that long, and Susie was a very reliable employee who would not just have gone out to do something else without first returning to the office, or at least letting someone know what she was doing. It was so unusual for her that her colleagues decided to contact her family to see if they might know where she was. Between 3 and 4 p.m. they phoned Susie's parents and told them that she had not returned to the office and they didn't know where she was. Susie's parents also thought it was strange, as she was the type of person who always followed the rules and took her job seriously. Susie's mum later recalled the phone call that she received from the office, stating, "Do you have any idea where your daughter might be, Mrs. Lamplew? We wondered whether she would have called home for lunch. I don't want to worry you, Mrs. Lamplew, but Susanna left to show a house to a client and she had not returned. We wanted to check anywhere we could." Diana said that it sounded so unlike Susie that she immediately worried that something was wrong. Her colleagues at Sturgis & Sons told her family that Susie had left at around 12:40 that day and that she had travelled to the viewing as planned. They could see that she had taken her car and house keys and her purse, which had around £15 in it, but she had left her handbag at the office. It would appear that Susie was not planning on staying away from the office for long, which would have been the case if she was simply going to the viewing and then coming back. At 6:45 that night, Susie's manager called the police and reported Susie's disappearance. The police, like everyone else connected to her, were immediately concerned. She was a reliable employee who communicated regularly with family and friends, and no one had heard from her at all since she left the office. Detectives travelled out to Susie's flat on Disraeli Road in the hope that they might either find Susie or something that may help figure out where she might be. Detective Constable Mick Jones went to the flat and later explained that he wasn't sure what he was going to find. It would turn out that the search found nothing out of the ordinary, and importantly, it did not find Susie. A grid search of the area around where she was last known to be was organised to try and recover her car. Her white Ford Fiesta had not been found at the address at Sherald Road, and detectives knew that it needed to be recovered to give them any ideas as to what happened to her. Officers had been briefed on Susie's disappearance, and senior detectives were brought in, as it was believed that they would be needed in the investigation. At around 10 p.m, the grid search finally found what police were looking for. Susie's car was found just a mile from Sherald Road, on Stevenage Road. Strangely, it appeared to be parked opposite another house that Sturgis & Sons had up for sale. The car was immediately searched, and while once again Susie was not found, there were other very odd and concerning things discovered. When police checked the car, they found that the passenger door was locked, but the driver's side door was open. The handbrake had been left off, and the driver's seat had been pushed back. This was a very telling detail, as it was found that Susie could not have driven the car in this position. She was 5 feet 6 inches tall, and would not have been able to reach the pedals with the seat so far back. This indicated to police that perhaps Susie had not been the one driving the car. A white cream-coloured hat was found on the parcel shelf, and crucially, her credit cards were found in the glove compartment. It did not appear, therefore, that a robbery had taken place, which was also confirmed by the fact that there were no signs of a struggle. Her keys, however, were missing. When the car was later forensically searched, there were reportedly no fingerprints unaccounted for. The scene at the car did not give police any clues as to where Susie could be, and the police's concern for her only grew. The fact that it appeared someone else had driven the car and taken her keys was alarming, and the police were now convinced that something sinister may have happened to Susie. It was at this point that they made the decision to treat her disappearance as a murder inquiry. Susie's family were horrified by the discovery of her car and headed out to try and search the area where it had been found, in the hope that they would find her. Her mum Diana later described their reaction, saying, "My initial reaction of frozen shock gave way to a flood of adrenaline which shot into overdrive. We must find her. Physically, all the energy must be diverted into action. My husband and I went down to the river where her car had been abandoned. We called, we shouted, we encouraged our dogs to search for her. We must have been disturbing the neighbourhood, but more than that, as the police made clear, we were getting in the way." Police had opened a murder inquiry and they began looking for any evidence that pointed in this direction. At the end of the day, however, they knew just one thing. After 12:30, Susie had not been seen by anyone that she knew or was close to.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
The investigation began to focus on when Susie had last been seen by anyone, and one of the main lines of inquiry was the appointment that she had at 12:45. The entry for the viewing appointment, dated the 28th of July, stated that a meeting with a Mr. Kipper had been made for 12:45 at Sherald's Road. Officers asked the staff at Sturgis & Sons to search for any more information that they might hold about this client, Mr. Kipper. But strangely, they couldn't find anything. It didn't seem like Mr. Kipper had been officially registered as a client with the company, and his appointment was simply made to view Sherald's Road. This was a blow as they were unable to narrow down who this man may be. He was of clear interest to the officers, as from what they could gather, he may have been one of the last people to see Susie before she disappeared. There were, however, lots of things they didn't know at this point. Had Susie gone to the Sherald's Road appointment? Had Mr. Kipper even turned up for it? Or had something happened to her on the way? These were questions that the police had, and they needed to be answered. One way that they attempted to answer these was by appealing for witnesses in the area of number 37. This appeal did bring up some crucial sightings. The most important sighting came from the man who lived next to the address at Sherald's Road. He told police that he saw a blonde woman stood outside the property, and he watched as a man approached her. The man was around 5'8" to 5'9" tall, and was very smartly dressed and clean-shaven. This was a very important lead, and it established that Susie had attended her appointment and that Mr. Kipper had turned up for it. They now needed to track down Mr. Kipper to get his side of the story about the appointment and what he knew. The witness was able to help police make a photo fit of who he saw outside the house, and the image was distributed in newspapers across the country. In many cases, it made front-page news. Susie's case had now hit national headlines, and her disappearance was terrifying for many people. A woman who was simply doing her job had vanished into thin air at just after midday in the capital. How could this have happened? Susie was a very attractive, young, successful person who did not appear to live a high-risk lifestyle, and this made many other women in London concerned that whatever had happened to Susie could easily happen to them. The newfound independence of many women during the 1980s was being threatened, as lots of young women followed Susie's case closely. Another witness sighting at Stevenage Road, where Susie's car was found, also provided police with a possible vehicle that Mr. Kipper may have driven. A blue 1970s-style BMW was also seen in the area at around the same time. The witness who saw it remembered the car as it was double parked, and the witness struggled to pull up anywhere. This was an interesting lead, and police began searching for anyone who owned a BMW of that same style and age. There were many people who owned BMWs that were similar to the description, and detectives struggled to find one that could link in any way to the area at the time, or the elusive Mr. Kipper. He was their main line of inquiry for months, as Susie remained missing with little evidence as to her whereabouts. Mr. Kipper seemed to be the only person who had seen her after she left the office that day, and therefore remained the sole person of interest. Searches for him were fruitless, and detectives could find no one of that name anywhere in the country. 6 months after Susie's disappearance, detectives believed that they had found something of importance. A member of the public had reported a blue BMW that had been abandoned and had been left for several months without being moved. This car drew the attention of the witness, who thought that it was suspicious. The reason why it became relevant to Susie's case was that it matched the description of the car that had been seen in Stevenage Road, but also for another reason. When police checked the registration of the car, they found that it belonged to a Belgian man by the name of Mr. David Kuyper. He was a diamond dealer, and his physical description as well as his name somewhat matched that of the man seen with Susie. This was an important lead and one that police immediately followed up on. His similar name and description could be the breakthrough that they needed. Unfortunately for police, the press had also got wind of this possible lead, and the interest in Susie's case had grown exponentially, which meant that the journalists were also hot on their heels. Detectives travelled to Belgium to track down Mr. Kuyper, and along with them it's reported that journalists followed them to try and get a scoop on the story. Officers found Mr. Kuyper and questioned him about his whereabouts at the time of Susie's disappearance, and they discovered that he had an airtight alibi for the time that she went missing. Police had no choice but to fully eliminate him from the investigation. This was a huge blow, as detectives believed that the similarities with the car, the name and the description meant that this was their man. The similarities turned out to be simply coincidences. By now, 1986 had turned into 1987, and Susie was still nowhere to be found. Since the discovery of her car, there had been nothing else found that provided police with any new information. Susie's family were losing hope that their daughter may be found alive. However, they continued to appeal to the public, through the newspapers and on TV. Susie's mum Diana stated to the BBC, "I can face up to the fact that she has died, but I cannot face up to what has happened between. That's too much." The communication was relatively good between the Lamplughs and the police in the months following Susie's disappearance, with her parents contributing to the investigation and keeping her in the public spotlight. In 1987, however, a new lead investigator took over the case, Detective Superintendent Malcolm Hackett. It's reported that Hackett did not communicate to the same degree with the Lamplugh's, and this caused them an awful lot of frustration. Detective Superintendent Hackett continued to look into lines of inquiry. However, little progress was made, and after 12 months, Susie had not been found, and neither had any further evidence in the case. The fact that the police seemingly knew nothing more about her disappearance was a source of anguish for those that knew Susie, and implied that she did indeed just vanish without a trace. Detective Superintendent Hackett in an interview confirmed that he believed that Susie may have been abducted, but did not elaborate on anything further. The public were also baffled and concerned that whoever had committed this crime was out there and free to possibly do it again. It would later be known that Detective Superintendent Hackett had indeed been given some intelligence about a possible suspect in the investigation. Just over 10 months after Susie had gone missing, he was given a name by a police officer in Reading. This man had been arrested in the town for a rape of a woman at knife point. He had threatened the woman with the knife while she was sat in her car and then raped her. The officer reportedly informed Hackett that he believed that this man may have been involved with Susie's disappearance and would certainly not put it past him to commit it. The officer stated that the man's name was John Canan. Detective Superintendent Hackett, however, did not agree with the officer's statement, and even after interviewing Canan, he decided that he was not involved with Susie's disappearance. This decision would be later criticised by the public, the police, and Susie's family, as Canan would become, and still is, the prime suspect in Susie's disappearance and murder. Next week, we will continue Susie's story, look closer into John Canan, and bring the investigation up to the present day. Susie's disappearance remains one of the most mysterious and confusing cases that the UK has ever seen. Thank you for listening to today's episode, and the second part will be out next week rather than in a fortnight, as I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be able to wait that long. Thank you, as always, to our Patreon supporters. If you would like to support the podcast and receive bonus episodes and ad-free early access, then go over to the show notes and click the link. Thank you once again to everyone that leaves us a review, follows me on social media at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Everything helps. If you have any suggestions for cases, please contact me at theunseenpod@gmail.com. Tune in next week for the second part. As always, I'm Caprice, and this has been Unseen.